Donald Trump says he's freed Iranians to forge their own future after killing their autocratic leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. As the bombing continued Wednesday, Iran's Revolutionary Guard has reportedly backed the late Ayatollah's son as his successor. An organized resistance is struggling to emerge in this ethnically diverse land. Is Iran at risk of descending into sectarian division? Professor Naheed Siamdust of the University of Texas specializes in the politics of the Middle East. She's also part of the Iranian diaspora.
I'm not sure they have been given much of a choice. This has come to them. They had an uprising, and they've had uprising after uprising. But even the calls that we've been hearing, either for Reza Pahlavi or among, you know, a segment of the population prior to the attacks for some kind of foreign intervention, those did not come out of a place of choice. Those came out of a place of desperation, of economic desperation, political repression, and the fact that they did have a deal with the U.S. That the Trump government left in 2016 and imposed extreme sanctions. So overall, I would say, you know, unfortunately, the Iranian people, despite their lack of choices, have really done their best to try to improve their circumstances and ask for a better future. But yeah, no choices.
Well, you mentioned there, just in passing, Pahlavi, the son of the late Shah. Is he styling himself as the next leader of Iran?
He has been. I mean, that is, you know, his whole camp and, you know, all the people who are his entourage around him. That's what they're styling him as the next leader of Iran. From him, there have been some statements that really he would just provide a transition to the next government and that the people would have elections and choose their next leader democratically. But then there are also statements that, no, actually, from his supporters, that they really do want to return to a monarchy and they want him to be the leader, not to just facilitate a transition.
As an actual monarch, an absolute monarch, a constitutional monarch, some sort of transitional figure, that's a fascinating idea that they want to return to monarchy.
Definitely a constitutional monarch. I mean, I'm sure there's some very small minority, but I have not heard absolute monarchy.
Donald Trump says, look, to the people of Iran, I've removed your dictator. It's now up to you to take power. That's either very idealistic or perhaps even a bit cynical. Is there a movement of people who could assume power in the absence of the current regime?
I think that just shows how little understanding and knowledge the U.S. president has of Iran's political system, even of any kind of military strategy or how uprisings and revolutions happen or government takeovers. I think it literally comes out of a lack of any kind of understanding and some kind of grandstanding of wanting to offer this sort of freedom and independence to the Iranian people. But of course, it is nonsensical because they have killed the supreme leader, but there are structures in place. I think in order to do away with the Islamic Republic, which to me, it looks like that's what the U.S. and Israel are going for, there will have to be vast devastation of all kinds of infrastructures in Iran. And given that Trump has said that this war could last for another 4 to 5 weeks, I believe that's unfortunately what we're going to see, because that kind of devastation also brings with it a lot of loss of life. Even though they've said no, they're not really aiming for regime change, very clearly they're going for regime change, but that's not just going to be an overnight doing away with the supreme leader and having the people rise up. And that's because, you know, the Islamic Republic has decimated over the last 47 years, all opposition, all kinds of political groups that have tried to get any piece of power, they've decimated and silenced them, jailed them, executed them, or they've gone into exile. So there is really nobody in place. So for regime change to happen, for people to actually take over government, there is nobody really there organized in an organized way that could do that.
And yet, Naheed, one of the figures that jumps out at me is that for almost half a century, yes, of this theocratic regime, Iran has emerged with something like a 99% literacy rate among the young. Most university students and university graduates are women. We're talking here about a very educated, highly cultured populace. Is there not some infrastructure there, even if it's informal, for a people's movement to form? Because you've got this highly educated population.
Sure, but you know, that kind of thing takes time and organizing and planning and all of that. So it's not something that can arise overnight. There are some leaders in prison, for example, you know, Narges Mohammadi, the human rights lawyer, the Nobel laureate who's been locked up, still in solitary confinement. There's a Republican Party in Iran that has, you know, issued a statement with figures who could potentially create something. But all of those take time. And for a government to take over, they need to have the military means to have some kind of sovereignty. And none of this has been thought about. None of this has been planned. And so this attack has been done callously in a way that really leaves a huge vacuum. And unfortunately, with an increased risk of civil war or violence and infighting, unfortunately, nothing is in place that gives us the confidence that some kind of homegrown opposition or political system could come into power anytime soon.
Yeah, Nahid, you raised a very grim prospect there, but it's something the West, the world, must consider. You talked about a civil war. I noticed that demographically, Persians are about 60% of Iran. People who don't know much about it think that it's a monolithic country, but this is an incredibly diverse country, ethnically in particular. Is there a risk of sectarian fighting breaking out?
When I think civil war in Iran, and I hope it won't happen, and I like you and, you know, the suggestion you made, I very much hope that people will step in and try to put together some kind of government in the absence of, you know, the Islamic Republic. Maybe it'll be a fragment of the Islamic Republic of reform. Who knows what will happen? But when I think about a civil war, I'm not necessarily thinking alongside ethnic lines, because Iran has been a country like this, in this shape, for several centuries and for millennia as a much larger sort of empire. And so Iranians are used to being part of this huge, diverse fabric. They don't think of themselves, you know, within sort of these sectarian lines. So when I think about civil war, I'm thinking more about sort of different political groupings, because we can't assume that the Baluchis necessarily want to detach from Iran, the Kurdish. There are many people among them, and they have said so, that they're proud of being part of the Iranian nation. But there are, of course, different discontented, disgruntled factions within those ethnicities that could be armed and that could be funded by forces who would like to see Iran fall apart and become a failed state, a dismantled state. And seeing what Israel has done in the region, I believe that is the goal that they're going for. That is why there's no plan in place for what a future might hold. And this is going toward chaos unless some kind of miracle happens from within the Iranian population.
What are the ripple effects on the Shia diaspora? Because Iran, it's 90% Shia, and it's had great influence, of course, in neighboring Iraq. The United States, I'm not sure that they knew that they'd be handing large sections of Iraq to people who were proxies of the Iranian regime, and that's 20 years ago. What happens now in the Shia diaspora?
I mean, we've seen some of it, right? The Shias of Pakistan rose up and attacked the U.S. embassies there, and in the process, 20 of them were killed by their own security forces. We've seen people rise up in Iraq. We've seen attacks from Hezbollah on Israel. So this has unleashed, you know, a regional war at this point. It's not a full-fledged war yet, but the Shia groups who have allegiances to Iran, who are funded or armed by Iran, they will, of course, do their bit in this war, but they're not very powerful. I mean, they had been dismantled for the most part by Israel over the course of the, you know, that last couple of years, both in Syria and Lebanon. Israel has bombarded their military capacities. And so I don't think they have that much to offer, but there will be some of that.
You've written extensively in recent years about the mass protests, particularly the movement that arose in 2022, the Women Freedom Movement. Is there any remnant of sentiment, affection, attachment to the idea of Iran as an Islamic state?
We can see, based on who goes to the ballot box and votes for, or who has in the past voted for the candidate that the Supreme Leader has supported, that's been about 20% of the population. And we also see the masses of people out in Isfahan and other usage and other places mourning the Supreme Leader. So the base of the regime is somewhere between 15% to 20%. But I think a vast, vast majority of Iranians, as they've expressed, you know, an uprising after uprising is for secular Iran. Iran is probably the most secular, not probably, it's the most secular population in the Middle East. They want a free, democratic Iran. You know, the only thing is, I'm not sure this is how we're going to get there.
But I just wonder if the United States and Israel is mistaken in anticipating what they think the Iranian people might want when it comes to democracy.
I think the Iranian people, they have a very deep, rich, and humanist culture to draw on. And whatever, you know, the kind of secular democratic government that they would create and that they have aspired to create and that we see slogans for and manifestos for over the last few uprisings, including the Woman Life Freedom Uprising, is a very inclusive, diverse kind of democracy, but one that also cares for people. I don't think they are looking to America for that kind of their political government because America is failing its own people.
Just finally, you have deep roots in Iran. You still have much extended family in Iran. What have they been telling you, not just over the past few days as the bombardment of Iran has intensified, but particularly over the last few years?
All of them want change. All of them, you know, everybody believes that the Islamic Republic has denigrated both Islam and among the population by making it part of government. They do believe that it's been a hypocritical government that has used religion to enforce its repression and its corruption on the people. But in terms of what comes next, you know, my family is very split. You know, a few of them actually are really in favor of Reza Pahlavi offering a sort of transitional government or even becoming a constitutional monarch. The majority don't believe that he has that kind of competency, that he hasn't shown any kind of leadership over the past 40-some years that he's lived abroad, and are really hoping for a democratic, free Iran.
Naheed Siamdust of the University of Texas. And this is the Religion and Ethics Report on ABC Radio National.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.